And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Pizza Hut in Saskatchewan and the David Dubé-led Concord Group of Companies. Also brought to you by our friends over there at Wheel Estate. If you have a travel trailer you want to rent out this camping season, or you want to rent a travel trailer, check them out online at wheelestate.ca. Their rental's backed by a $1 million insurance policy. And if you want to get in the real estate game in the Regina and surrounding area, check out Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, the home expert team. Give him a call, 306-502-5355. I spoke of Pizza Hut and David Dubé. He joins me on the phone now, spending the holidays with his family in California, playing some golf, watching some football, and just taking in the nice weather. David, thanks for your support of this podcast. Thanks for joining me on the phone line. David, of course, you've been a big supporter of university sports and football and amateur sports and this podcast, which I really appreciate. I'm watching as it's holiday season. We're gearing up for the World Junior Hockey Championship, obviously in Canada again this year. And they have like a 2-week lead up, and it's great. And TSN's done a great job along with Hockey Canada in turning this thing into something bigger than life. But it's bigger than life in Canada, not really anywhere else. And that has to do with the coverage and the exposure. Can we ever get something like that at the university sports level, and in particular the football level? You're a great guy to talk to about this because, you know, I mean, if you don't think it's a big deal, nobody else will think it's a big deal. So doesn't somebody have to come together here, you sports and TV, and do something about this?
Well, there's no question. I mean, if you want a model, just look at the U.S. Every year during the World Juniors, I'm one of the few people that's quite upset it's on television on every channel all the time, because I want to watch U.S. football bowl games. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that get bumped all the time. So all you have to do is look south to our neighbors and say, look what they have done with college football. I mean, in many ways, it's bigger than the NFL, because there's so much loyalty to your college team. Now, we're never going to accomplish that in Canada. We're talking about an 18 playoff. That's funny. This FBS is talking about an 18 playoff, and they're saying maybe in 6 years. And we've been talking about it for some time now, but theirs will be bolstered by television. Without television and without developing that market, the Canadian college football market, or any Canadian college sport for that matter, on television, you're not going to grow it enough that any network will say, we'll commit to a long-term deal. So I think what you're seeing in U Sport now is their deal with Sportsnet is over for football, and they're out actively looking for a partner. And we would all hope that it would be the home of football in Canada, which is TSN, but they had TSN before. So it's a wait-and-see prospect. But candidly, I mean, unless you have television during the regular season, we can't hope for a ta-da moment where all of a sudden people will be interested when you're down to the final four, as we are today, or you're down to the final eight, as they're talking about moving in the future.
Well, I know, David, you've been you're think outside the box guy. You're trying to push the envelope in the past and make things happen in terms of, you know, we finally get games on national TV, or so to speak, national TV, and it's St. Effects, and they're getting smoked by Laval or whoever, 63-0, and so we finally get a game on TV, and it's a blowout. You know, is there an appetite? Is there a time when you think we might see like a interconference game where Calgary plays Laval and we get that on a Friday night on TSN or something like that?
Well, it wasn't for lack of effort. I mean, we certainly brought the idea out. I think when you say I think outside the box, I just think the box is a little bit bigger. I'm probably still thinking inside of a box. It's just one that needs to grow and be bigger. And, you know, university presidents and athletic directors, traditionally within the model we have, you know, they're not really concerned about that. If you go to the U.S. and you look at their commissioners of the Big Five, the Power Five conferences, they are motivated by television because it brings in money, because it does a lot of things to help them grow their departments. And football is the money generator in those departments. So all other sports end up being dependent on football for additional funding, as it should be. Not everything is a big-time spectator sport. I would frankly argue in Canada, none of them are big-time spectator sports. Even in-stadium attendance the last 2 years has declined. You would think it couldn't have gotten any lower in Canadian college football. It's dropped. Laval has dropped. The big schools are all dropping in attendance. They're having difficulty reaching millennials, which I find fascinating because so many of them are on those campuses, and yet they still cannot find a way to get them to the ballpark.
How would you get them to the ballpark, David? What would you do to get millennials to come to the ballpark? And why is it just the TV thing? That's why the product's not out there. That's why people aren't coming to the games. That's why attendance is down.
Well, you know, it's not a chicken or an egg thing, in my view. I think you start with a strong local base. If you don't have a strong local base who wants to watch your team, it doesn't matter if they're on television playing somewhere else. Nobody's going to watch them. So it does start with your alumni base. It starts with your community, and it starts with students. Because those are going to be the viewers for when your team's playing. You know, with Interlock doesn't seem to have a pulse. This idea that you play games that have meaning doesn't have a pulse, and they'll say it comes down to money, but there was a money solution there 3 years ago or 4 years ago when we pitched it. And they still weren't willing. So I think there's a resistance to change, but you have to develop. We did a lot of things in Saskatchewan, and we're seeing our attendance drop, to be quite candid with you.
Yeah.
In spite of the game day atmosphere and experience, you have to make that game kind of the thing for students to do before they go out for the evening on a Friday night or on a Saturday night or whenever you're hosting your game. And there needs to be incentives to get them out there, get them out active in the game. Without them, you're going to have another lost generation of fans. The majority of our fans today in Canadian university sports are in their 50s and 60s. They're not in their 30s and 20s. You can look at that when you walk in any stadium in the country, and I'm in them, and you see that the student side is empty, and even the alumni side is down. Go to Western, you look at a Western game where they played in the playoffs, one side of the stadium was completely vacant, and the other side had some people, and those were the alumni and the community folks who are older. So I think the relevancy gap is something that's got to be addressed, but you've got, I would implore U Sports to bring in some people, some experts from outside to be able to sit in the room with those university presidents, those athletic directors, and say, look, what you're doing is not working. Are you not seeing this? Let's try a significant deviation moving forward, make a 3 or 5 year commitment, and see if you can gain some traction for the sport.
How concerned would you be if you heard an athletic director say, and I'm not going to mention names, if you heard an athletic director say, our goal is not to have not to achieve athletic excellence. The teams are there basically to prop up the undergrads and really not concern ourselves. Our vision isn't for athletic excellence. What would David Dubé think if he heard that?
I think you're talking to someone in an unemployment line, or should be.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be at an institution. I mean, we are about, it seems to me that post-secondary education is at a higher level. So if you don't want your post-secondary athletics to be at a higher level, and they're not delivering something in terms of recruiting power for your university, for students, in terms of exposure in the community, involvement in the community, leadership from your student athletes. If you're not expecting a return from athletics, I can promise you, you won't get one. I think intelligent universities do expect, the reason that they have those athletic programs is because it adds to the culture of the institution. It does get them lots of, look, we're on your podcast talking about it. I mean, it's getting the media exposure, and hopefully listeners go, wow, you know what, that's a great institution. I've got good feelings about it. I'd like my kids to go there. So, to my view, an athletic director who is stuck in mediocrity, you know, should go and run a club sport somewhere. But they have no place in Canadian college athletics.
David Dubé joining us here for Growing the Game with Ballsy. So what do you feel about, a clearinghouse? My son is right now in the process of, you know, he's in grade 11 going into grade 12, just wrote his SATs. They have an NCAA clearinghouse, obviously, in the States. How do you feel about something like that being instituted in Canada? Although, judging by just your past few comments here, I'm thinking there probably isn't much of an appetite, both dollars or, you know, in terms of change at the U Sport level either.
There absolutely is a need, and has been for years, for a clearinghouse. You got to go to the DMV. We don't, you know what? When you want a license to drive a car, you don't buy it at 7-Eleven. Like, you don't just go to your mom and dad and say, hey, pick me for a driver's test, give me a piece of paper that says I can write. You can't do it for a fishing license. And we've got to take this seriously and understand that if we're going to have rules, we've got to be applied equally across the country. And I think it's noble to have this self-disclosure. We've had a couple in our province recently, including one this week, and that's great. And you're counting on the honesty of the institution, and I'm hoping that there's 100% honesty. But what if they just don't find their mistakes? You know, if you make a mistake, you're generally the last person who's going to find it. I don't proofread my own letters because I know what I want it to say, and I see what I want it to say. I don't see the typos. So you need some independent third party. It wouldn't cost a lot of money. It would take coaches from being administrators and allow them to coach, which is, I think, what the student-athletes want their coaches to do, and institutions to do as well. And it brings any academic institution into ill repute if they're found to have played an ineligible athlete. It looks like they're not paying attention. So why would you not want an insurance policy, a national standard that you adhere to, or else you kick your student-athlete back to you and say, oh, I'm sorry, they're missing a class, or they're not academically eligible, or whatever. It would lessen the dependence on every institution having one. We could all contribute and have an efficient system where there'd be one in Toronto or wherever you want to put it, and some rules and regulations around it. It just seemed logical.
Hey, back to the football side of things, and you talked about Sportsnet being done, and now, you know, TSN had it before, and hopefully they pick it up again. You know, 2011, the BC Lions hosted Winnipeg in the Grey Cup, and the day before that, some argue maybe the best Vanier Cup ever, McMaster and Laval went to overtime, and they had, I think they had 25,000 there, and then the next year it was played at Skydome before the Grey Cup, and there was 37,000 there, or that's what the announced attendance was anyway. But what I'm getting at here, where do you fall in this? I'm all for having it on the same weekend as the Grey Cup at the Grey Cup site. How do you feel about that? Or do you think it should be independent?
To be completely candid, I started and for the longest time thought it had to be independent.
Yeah.
And I was wrong. The facts don't, you know what? Numbers don't lie. And those numbers, when they were done by an external promoter who knew how to drive numbers in Canada, knew how to make that venue part of the Grey Cup package, candidly, any deal with TSN, or if there is to be one on television, has to be linked with the CFL. I mean, it just has to be. Either games need to lead in or follow a CFL game so you can get that little cusp audience to see what you're doing. University football needs that. Mm-hmm. The numbers continue to go down, except in Quebec. And I think you need to go before that number gets to zero, except the fact that it worked when we experimented I wasn't involved. I like to think I'm part of the solution, part of the system anyway. We need to link back up with the Grey Cup and hopefully parlay that into more viewers.
David Dubé joining me here for Growing the Game with Ballsy. You talked about the Huskies and attendance was down. And I was actually at a couple of Husky games. I called one and then was there for another game. Attendance wasn't what I remembered it to be. How concerned is an alumni guy and who's put his money where his mouth is with that program? How concerned are you that, that's one of the hotbeds outside of Laval? That would be your other hotbed of football that, I mean, you might know of some others, but those are two that jump off the map to me. How concerned are you about, the interest level in even the Saskatoon area?
Well, obviously, it's been near and dear to my heart for an awful long time. I'm not as engaged with it as I have been in the past. And so, when I look at it as the chair of the Board of Trustees, I go, it's very concerning. There's got to be a way to rejuvenate that and get fans re-engaged with that program. They won this year. We'll see if it's about winning and losing. I've never believed that it was. I believe that it was more creating an event that people wanted to participate in. You make Friday night that you make it the place to be at Griffith Stadium during the game. And, we gained a lot of traction. We got up to games where we had, over 9,000 fans in a stadium that seats 6,000. I mean, This is what success looks like, and now it's backsliding. And so I think Western Sac slid a long way. Laval is backsliding. We had very few fans, 1,800 fans on average when we were going to Vanier Cups in the 90s and 2000s. We were at the pinnacle of our program then and still not bringing out fans. The changes to make it a game day experience did a lot of good. You can see that they're gaining some traction at BC where they've done a lot of work, and I've worked with Dave Sidhu and the folks at UBC to try to help them gain that traction in the community.
Yeah. And,
we're,
you know,
missing something. Yeah, we're missing something, and I think that something is students.
You know, and here's something. I was at the game, and my cousin's Dan Farthing, so I'm not good. He listens to this podcast. It's not a cut down to Dan Farthing. But I'm looking at their program, and they got a nice profile on Dan Farthing. But they don't have a program. They don't have a profile on, like, Kyle Siemens or you know, pick a name, Macabrota or Mason Nyes. Like, the CFL runs into the same problem. They don't promote their stars. Like, it's Tom Brady in the New England Patriots. It's Philip Rivers in the LA Chargers. It's not, you know, we don't see that in the CFL. You don't see that at U Sports. And I think if we want to get some of these guys encouraged and excited about the kids they go to school with, we should probably promote them, shouldn't we?
Well, you know what? I would think so. Do we even know who our customers are for Canadian college sports?
Yeah,
I think if you asked 18 athletic directors, they give you 18 different answers. Who do they want as their customers? They would generally say anyone, everyone. That's not, you know, hope isn't a strategy when it comes to marketing. And I think too many times we just hope it's going to be better next year. We hope we win. You know, here are our coaches and our athletes, you know, working 12 months a year to put a winning product on the field, and we're attempting to promote it weeks before the season.
Lastly, to wrap up, David, your thoughts on the Husky season that was just transpired, a team that was picked by everybody to be last in their conference, and they end up getting to the semifinal. Just your thoughts on what transpired there, and maybe the future of the team on the field as you see it. Because of the guys I talked to about football, you're one of the guys that knows quite a bit. So what do you think?
Well, thank you. I would tell you this. I thought the team went on an incredible run. Coach Forey got those guys to believe in themselves. They had some great poster board material. Every coach in that conference voted them last.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like us against the world. You know, it's easy. Lots of guys can say that. But the coaching staff got them fired up and focused around that. And I would say, I think you saw a team there that absolutely achieved what they got everything they could. Those guys never quit on a play. They were a real tribute to what Husky pride is, and it was a hell of a run this season. And honestly, when I went up to Western, I was like, they could go to Laval after this. I mean, every game they came with their kind of hard hat on, and they played a real hard nosed, tough brand of football. Still sophisticated enough. I mean, yeah, a lot of guys have great seasons on that team. The one guy I don't think gets nearly enough love was Colton Clawson, who I thought eight touchdowns led the Canada West. He was the spark plug that drove that team. And so, you know, he's coming back, I think, on both lines. I expect Evan McElbrother to be playing in the CFL next year.
Yeah.
So they won't have many losses on the two lines, but I think that's one. I mean, he played phenomenally well all season, and I'm sure the CFL scouts will be looking at him. So, you know, as goes your Lions, goes your team. I think they go into 2019 with a ton of confidence, knowing there's no one they can't beat, and they're strong on both lines. They'll work on their weak points, you know, during the season. But this team wasn't built on a build it up for 4 years, compete for a year in your fifth year, and then reload. Or rebuild. I think it's more of a reload and backfill in some areas for them. So I think the future is certainly bright. I would be shocked if every coach in Canada West didn't learn their lesson and next year they vote the Huskies number one unanimously.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I'm hearing what the schedule could be, and I'm predicting at least a 6-2 mark, and then of course they've got Atlantic Canada coming to the Western winner, so they might have a good chance of taking that next step and going to a Vanier Cup for sure. Well, I think go ahead, sorry.
I just want to jump in. Want to say this because what you just said is an illustration. You look at the schedule and you look at the fact that Atlantic is coming to the West and you have a really good shot at the Vanier Cup. If Quebec was coming out West, we'd be going, wow, it's really tough to get to the Vanier Cup. That indicates that we've got a problem in our country in football. And somebody's going to have to deal with it.
David, thanks for this. Best of the holiday season, and thanks for your support of this podcast and everything else. I appreciate it.
Same to you and all the listeners. Have a great holiday season.
And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by our friends at Pizza Hut in Saskatchewan. Also, Wheel Estate. If you have a travel trailer you want to rent or rent one out, Check them out online at realestate.ca and by Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage. If you're in the real estate game in the Regina and surrounding area, give him a call, 306-502-5355. I'm joined on the phone by Atlee Simon of the Calgary Stampeders. Now, I said this to Noah Picton in the last podcast. That has a nice ring to it. Does that have a nice ring to it for you, too?
Oh, absolutely. I just have the opportunity to play, continue my football career anywhere is an honor.
Yeah. Now, Atlee, I want to get into you know, signing with the Stamps and all that and the bright future you have, but I want you to describe this season for Atlee Simon, this past season. How would you describe, how would you characterize Atlee Simon's last season with the Rams?
You know, probably frustrating is the biggest word. You know, I got hurt early on in the year, and then just with the whole mix-up with the eligibility and all that type of stuff kind of put a damper on your fifth year. But, you know, I just tried to finish off the best I can when I got back healthy. And, you know, it wasn't exactly how everyone thought it would go, but, you know, it is what it is.
Now, let me ask you about that, because I asked Noah about this, so I'll afford you the opportunity to say something here. What do you think of the whole clerical error and the basically incompetence that messed up your season?
You know, they say it's just a human error, and it's really just that's what it is. You know, it's tough when the players get the brunt of the consequences, and there's not much consequences for the school and the admin. So I think that's the biggest thing that I think of it. You know, it's kind of unfair, but it's the rules that are in place, and when it happens, we can't really do much about it.
Which to me is an embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
When it came down that day, when it came down, and Steve Bryce came into the locker room, what were the initial thoughts of Atlee Simon?
Well, I kind of had an idea of what it was about early on, because I heard about the player that had an eligibility issue going into the meeting. So I kind of had an idea of that could be a possibility. It was just you just didn't believe it was actually happening, you know, because we were going on a good run there. We were in position for the playoffs, making a run. I felt like I was like a week away from being healthy so we can make that playoff run. And, you know, as a fifth-year player who's put a lot into this program, to have that last opportunity to go deep into the playoffs and kind of accomplish what you wanted to accomplish, being taken away from you, it's hard for them to swallow.
Hey, I'm trying to grow the game of football on this podcast, so I don't want to sound like a Debbie Downer or a negative Nelly, but does it frustrate you, a guy who excels at this sport and excelled for 5 years minus the injuries with the Rams, does it frustrate you as an athlete that they don't seem, and by that I mean maybe the ADs across the country or those in the offices and the ivory towers of U Sports, they don't seem to really care about university sports. It almost seems like they treat it barely better than a participation sport. Does that frustrate you? Is that how you kind of feel?
To a degree, yeah. It's tough, you know, as they don't, I'm sure that a lot of them do understand how much we put into it, but this is our lives for 5 years, and I don't know if they fully understand how much we care and we put into it, and how much the community cares about it, too. You know, our friends and family, they put a lot into it as well, just not us. So to kind of have that slapped in their faces, they're kind of, it's hard to kill, and, you know, hopefully it changes moving forward, because for the future guys that are coming to this league, it's really a good league. It's a good experience, but if we don't have we don't have the help from the ADs and the schools, it's not going to grow across the country.
Yeah, no, as it relates to the Rams, let's just focus on the Rams here. And I beat this drum, too. You guys have had the likes of Akeem Hicks, who, outside of Khalil Mack, is the best player on the Chicago Bears. He played at that university. John Ryan's won a Super Bowl. Stephon Charles has played for a few teams in the league. Brett Jones, playing right now for the Minnesota Vikings, played for the Giants. And you look at, you know, you walk into that school, except for the Rams little area, you'd never know those guys played at the University of Regina. You'd think that would be publicized everywhere, because that's something the school can hang their hat on, but it's like, it's almost like, meh, yeah, no big deal. They take away your football team's weight room, so it's communal. That, like, to me, like, you'd think you'd sink money into the football program because those guys have an opportunity to go to the next level and play professional football like yourself.
Yeah, no, exactly. I feel a lot of recruits come through and they ask, like, where's Akeem Hicks? Where's all those dudes? They should be plastered across the school, along with Noah Picton, who you know, just won the head Crichton, is all-time U Sports leader in passing. That should be something they're proud of. They should have posters of him all over the place, you know, and try to market this great team that we have. You know, I think as a team, we've made strides, but it support from the school and the community affects how well we do. Having people at the games affects how we do. Having that home field advantage, you know, those types of things. And I just don't feel like we've done a great job as a school and as a team to publicize and market our team the way that we should.
Atlee Simon joining me here for Growing the Game with Ballsy, now a member of the Calgary Stampeders. Before I get to that, how do you want your Rams career to be remembered?
Well, you know, just a player that was very versatile and, you know, contributed to the team all 5 years he was there. You know, I think I was a good teammate, good leader within the locker room, and I think I've upheld my reputation throughout the city. So it's just a person that worked their butt off every year and tried to come back to add to the game that I had and did everything to help my team win.
Hey, forgive me, I could be wrong here. Aren't you an athletes in action guy? Like, aren't you a pretty faith-based guy, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, big. I was one of the guys that kind of helped implement a chaplain program into our team in the last few years.
So tell me, the stress of the game, it's a very stressful game, especially now you're going into the fireman, professional football, where there's a guy looking to take your job every day, or you're looking to take somebody else's job. It's a very insecure world. How much does that faith help you out?
Yeah, no, huge. Biggest thing Athletes in Action preaches, their biggest thing is our identity is not made in our sport. And that's going to be huge going into a pro life. Where we look as people look at us as just athletes. And when I have to look at myself and remember that I'm more than just an athlete, I'm more than just my job. And I'm a person that can influence people in a lot of different ways. So every day I just have to go about it knowing that my athleticism, my sport isn't what defines me. And God and my relationship with him is what defines me.
Atlee Simon joining us here on Growing the Game with Ballsy, a guy who has his head on straight, which is great to see in the world of professional sports as he has signed a deal with the Calgary Stampeders. So do you think that versatility you mentioned, Atlee Simon, will be your calling card going to the pro ranks?
Yeah, I feel that like that's a lot of what the coaches and people have been telling me, just be able to play multiple positions, whether it's slot back, whether it's running back, whether it's playing on special teams or they need me to play. I think that's going to be my calling card, and I think that's why I need to show going into camp this year.
Much like Noah Picton, you go into familiar surroundings because you were with the Stamps last year. And the last time I talked to you in this podcast, and we can reiterate it, it's funny, we're talking to you, you're at the gym. Don't take this the wrong way, but you even mentioned to me, the weight room was never really your thing, so to speak. Like, you did it, but you didn't really do it maybe as much as you should have. Are you dedicating yourself more to that this year, knowing that that's what's going to keep you in the pro football game?
Yeah, I've already been going for a good month and a half now. I'm in here 4 times a week, and then I'm on the track 2 times a week. So I'm taking – and being away from the Rams, being able to kind of do my own thing and follow a program that the Stamps gave me has helped me a lot, just to be able to manage my time a little better. And I'm taking it really seriously. My goal is to put on about another 5 pounds of muscle before going to camp and then – just getting as big and fast as I can.
We talk about fear and trying to manage that fear and stress. Did this last year and the frustration, as you call it, with the Rams and it's being your last year in university football, did it kind of make you think about your mortality in the game? And there's the real finality to it, isn't there?
No, absolutely. I took a couple hits this year that were the biggest hits I've taken in my whole career, and both of them kind of took a toll on my body. So I definitely understand that this game isn't guaranteed moving forward. Every time you step on the field, there's a risk that you could be hurt and your career could be ended. So that's on me to get in the gym like I'm doing right now to get physically prepared and maintain that my mental toughness. And hopefully moving forward, you know, I'll be protected and I can have a long career.
Pretty exciting, though, for you to go into the Grey Cup Championship locker room and a team that right now arguably the model franchise in the Canadian Football League, and to go to some familiar surroundings. I mean, you know Dave Dickinson and how he runs things. Of course, you know Mark Mueller, another Ram, and Richard Sindani, a Regina boy, Campbell Tartan, Regina Ram kind of guy. So that's kind of nice for you, too.
How are you?
No, yeah, just to have that familiarity going back is going to be big. I'm still in contact with a lot of the guys that are on the team too, so I have kind of that relationship going back, and just the running backs that are going to be in the room again next year coming back are all great guys, and I have good relationships with them too. So I feel a lot more confident coming back just to have that first camp under my belt and understand what I need to work on, and hopefully I can come back and show them that I have been working really hard on my weaknesses, and hopefully that can get me over the hump.
New Year's resolution time, I'm not going to ask you that, but I'm going to ask you, what's your goal for 2019? You can give me a broad goal, or you seem like a guy that likes to break things down in segments. So what would be a couple of your goals this year, both maybe on the field and off the field?
First of all, just making the team. You know, making that roster is going to be my biggest goal, and contributing whatever way I can, you know, whether it is asking me to play slot back or whether it's just I'm just a straight special teamer. I'm going to take that opportunity and just jump on that opportunity. And moving away is going to be my first time moving away from home. So that's going to be a big, big change in my life. So just getting accustomed to living away from home and kind of growing myself as a person that way is going to be big for me.
How excited is mom and dad and the family about Atlee Simon continuing his football career in the pro ranks? Dad must be pretty pumped. I talk to him once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. They're all just so proud of me. They're my biggest support system, and you know I can guarantee they're going to be down when I make the team at every game, or almost every game. So they travel well, and I'm really happy that I have a family like that.
Hey, before I let you go, is there anybody you want to kind of thank? Any coaches, or is there anybody that comes to the top of your mind besides your family that helped you get to this point?
No, absolutely. Dwayne Mason has been my running back coach for the past 5 years. I have a great relationship with him. It went way deeper than just playing football with us. We had multiple texting conversations and just conversations before meetings about life and seeing how I'm doing. I looked at him as a father figure on the team. Mark McConkey is a great players coach. He helped me grow as a receiver big time because I wasn't really understanding how to play receiver. I think I have the ability to play it, but I didn't really understand what it all took. So he really helped me take my game to the next level there. And then my chaplains, Sean Hermanson and Nick Panko, were great influences in my life. The last 3 years for sure really helped me grow as a person, keep my head on straight when I could have taken a turn for the worse.
You take this, I could just sense here before I wrap it up, you take this role, I guess, for lack of a better word, pretty seriously, don't you?
Yeah, big time. You know, I know I have a lot of eyes on me, including my brother. It starts with my younger brother. I have a kid brother who's 8 years younger than me, who's a heck of an athlete as well. And he looks up to me, and I know I have eyes on me all the time. So I know I have to be careful about how I portray myself and what I'm doing because I'm a role model for those kids, and I want to make sure that I'm leading in a great example.
Well, man, you know what? I say this to a lot of guys. Wish you luck, good luck, but you're one of the guys I'm really cheering for. Even though you're going to be wearing those ugly colors in Calgary, we're going to cheer for you for sure. I hope the Stamps lose, but I hope Atlee Simon and Mark Mueller and those guys do well. Thanks for this. Appreciate it. And Happy New Year, my friend.
You too. Thanks for having me.
And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy. It's brought to you by our friends at Pizza Hut in Saskatchewan and David Dubé and the Concord Group of Companies. Thanks to him for his support and Pizza Hut in Saskatchewan. Also want to thank Paul Waldry for getting on board once again over there at Royal LePage, the home expert team. Give him a call if you want to get in the real estate game, 306-502-5355. And, of course, our friends at Wheel Estate. If you have a travel trailer, you want to rent this camping season, or you want to rent one out, check them out online at wheelestate.ca, and all their rentals backed by a $1 million insurance policy, so you have peace of mind when you're out camping this summer or you have your trailer rented out. Okay, joining me on the phone now is Ethan Vibert from Miller High School. We'll start there first, Ethan. What was this season like for you, winning a city and provincial championship? First time you've brought the championship back to Miller in a long, long time.
It was pretty cool. A lot of us been working really hard for getting to school ever since we started coming to school, and it meant a lot to us winning this season, and definitely worked hard for it.
I asked Nick Makowski this, so I'll ask you the same question. Did you guys feel a lot of pressure being that you had a lot of grade 12s? Like it was really your time to shine?
Yeah, I felt we felt that. We had a lot of guys like on Team Sask and stuff and playing like for selects. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of talent, so there's definitely high expectations put on ourselves and by others right from the start.
Yeah, certainly came together as you guys win the cities and then go on to win the provincial championship. Okay, so let's rewind a bit here. Yeah, how long have you been playing football for now? You're in grade 12, but how long have you been playing a competitive football for?
Started playing RMF in grade 8, and yeah.
Have you always been a big boy? Like you're 6'6", about 280 pounds right now. Have you always been a big boy ever since you started playing football?
Yeah, I've always been one of the bigger guys.
Yeah, were you an offensive lineman have you always been an offensive lineman, or when you were in the RMF did you play a different position?
I've always played at O-line whole football career so far.
What got you into football, Ethan Vibert?
I've been watching football ever since I was a little kid with my parents and stuff, and both my parents are big Rider fans, so the games are always on TV and stuff, and I always go to them when I can, and Yeah.
Who do you like on that Rider offensive line? Is there a professional football player either with the Riders or maybe the NFL level that you kind of try to emulate, model your game after?
I don't really say there's anyone I try and like model my game after, but there's definitely people that kind of look at as like just kind of showing the way, almost showing how things are possible and stuff. I just kind of take what I learn and. Use what I think works best for me, but also, yeah.
Yeah. So who do you like? Who do you like to watch? Who do you like to watch? Like, do you like to watch a Brendan Labatt or a Dan Clark? Who sticks out for you?
On the Riders, I really like
just in general,
Thaddeus Coleman and also Quentin Nelson on the Colts. Like, it's always fun to watch him coming in. He's a rookie. Beast.
Yeah, for sure. So, just for the people that haven't watched you play, what's your position? What's your position on the O-line?
So I usually play left tackle.
Yeah. So left tackle. That's you're usually protecting the blind side of the quarterback. Just talk about the challenges that come with that position, Ethan.
For playing tackle and stuff, you got to be a little quicker off the ball and stuff, and got to make sure you have good technique. So you're usually dealing with some faster guys. They're usually faster than you.
Ethan Vibert joining us here, growing the game with Ballsy. What do you think, for those that haven't watched you play? I've watched you play. You're a specimen out there. But in terms of your play, what do you think is your best attribute? What's your biggest strength, Ethan?
I think my biggest strength is kind of a combination of my like size and strength with my athleticism, because a lot of people look at me and they think that I'll be kind of slow or not very athletic, but definitely surprise them off the line.
Yeah. Okay, so before we get to where you decide to go to school, let's talk about the importance of playing maybe the Team Saskatchewan route like you did, and playing with the selects with guys like Zelko and the program he runs out there. What has that meant for your football journey?
Really, that's been like the big difference. So when I started with the selects, that's like the first coaching I've had at like a high level. They have some of the best coaches probably in the country coming out there to help you out. So that definitely made a huge difference on my game. And then the Team Sask, it's like, it just raised everything to a whole another level, like both mentally and physically. Like, you're going against best players in Canada and you're using like university offenses and stuff. And
So what did it mean for you, Ethan Vibert, joining us here and growing the game with Ballsy? What did it mean for you to, like, you know, this whole process? You've settled on South Dakota State University, the South Dakota State University Jackrabbits. First off, You know, guys like Zeljko Stefanovic and Chris Enrico, what did they do for you in terms of, you know, opening your path to the States? Because a guy in Saskatchewan, you know, Miller Marauder, Regina boy, probably initially doesn't think, oh, I don't have a chance in the States. So how much of an eye-opener was that for you, and how much did those guys help you out?
Well, yeah, it was really wasn't going to Division I wasn't really even a dream of mine until February when we were in Texas and Zeljko introduced me to Chris and we started talking and stuff. And yeah, like I didn't even think that it was possible really for me to do, or it wasn't really something I was thinking about too much, but they definitely opened my eyes and helped me see my actual dream and potential was.
Mm-hmm. So talk to me about the process. What was that like? I know, so tell us first off, what schools were looking at you down south? I know you had a bunch here in Canada, but down south, who was looking at you?
Down south, I was talking like South Dakota and like University of North Dakota, North Dakota State. I was talking to Baylor. I went to their camp in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to like Arizona State a bit and Liberty.
Yeah. So what blew you away about South Dakota State? What really put them over the top and why you decided to go to the Jackrabbits?
No, it was really a bunch of things. Like they got really nice facilities. They got a big indoor like practice field and they got a pretty nice stadium. But really the main thing was just like kind of coaches and it's a good family environment. It feels like everybody is really close and They all get along pretty well, and when I went on my visit, I got fit in with them pretty well. So,
excellent. Ethan Viber joining us here for Growing the Game with Ballsy. Was it an eye-opener for you to go to some of these schools and just see how dedicated and how important football is to them and to their communities and the university?
Yeah, it was. It's really nothing like here when you get to some of those schools. So like when we were in Texas for the Baylor camp, we also stopped by like U of T, or UT, like University of Texas and Texas State. And
mm-hmm.
They got some big stadiums down there. And
yeah,
it's like South Dakota, they spend a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing. Hey, you go just over the border, Saskatchewan into North Dakota and South Dakota, and you just see their facilities and just how they. Just the mentality with sports in the United States, and is just, you know, literally over the 49th parallel. There's even just a dramatic difference from Saskatchewan to the Dakotas.
Yeah, for sure. Once you get into like Fargo and stuff, like they got 12,000 people just going for college games.
Yeah, where the Rams would kill for a crowd like that for sure. You know, I got to ask you a kind of a lifestyle question. Are you a little bit nervous being a Saskatchewan boy? I know it's just in South Dakota, but just kind of venturing out on your own and, you know, new surroundings, new program, new schooling. Like, are you nervous or are you ready to spread your wings, so to speak?
I'm a little nervous, but I think I'm ready. It's South Dakota's not too much different than here, and the coaches will definitely make it a lot easier.
I was wondering, is that important to you? Like, you know, there's other kids that you trailblaze the way. There might be other kids that follow you. Is there, like, was that important to you that you go to a place that isn't much different than where you grew up? Like, if you went to Texas, you know, it might be different culture, different mentality than what you grew up in here in Saskatchewan, whereas the Dakotas aren't much different.
That wasn't really something I was, like, too concerned with to begin with. It's really just, I was more concerned with the people that were there because they're going to help make the difference of how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like the coaches, you spend a lot of time with your position coach. So that was really important that you like your position coach and stuff. And
yeah. So when do you head down to South Dakota State? When does your football journey, obviously got to finish high school. So when do you head down there? When does your Jackrabbit football journey begin?
Probably heading down there late July, early August.
Cool. And what are you taking in school, Ethan?
I'm going to go into exercise science.
Exercise science. So can you tell me what is that? Give me a bit of background on that.
It's basically the same thing as kinesiology, just that's what they call it.
Exercise science. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's neat. All right. And what are your professional, do you aspire to be a professional football player? You talk about your dreams playing Division One. Do you have further dreams here as we navigate our way through? You want to play pro football one day?
Yeah, that's definitely a goal of mine, whether it's CFL or NFL, really. Just football is definitely something I want to do throughout the rest of my life.
Okay, one last question as it relates to football before I let you go. Is there anything that you feel like, we talked about your attributes, but just going through the camps at Baylor or maybe working out for the guys at South Dakota State, what do you think you have to do to improve your game? Everybody's got to improve their game. What do you have to do, Ethan Vibert, to improve your game?
Really, I just got to keep working hard and stuff. And, you know, just little technique things I got to work on and adjust, especially for switching American football. And, yeah, just kind of doing what the coach is telling me to do and working hard.
Yeah, I guess that's interesting because they don't have a yard off the ball there. So you talked about quick feet, quick hands, good technique. You got to be even quicker playing the American game, right?
Yeah, for sure. Getting in your face a lot faster.
That's Ethan Vibert, who is a Miller Marauder, but he's going to be graduating and taking his talent south of the border to play for the South Dakota State University Jackrabbits. Thanks for this, Ethan. Happy New Year and best of luck.
Yeah, thanks.
And that brings to a close another edition of Growing the Game with Ballsy, episode 66 in the books. I want to thank, of course, Ethan Vibert for joining me, and good luck to him and South Dakota State University. I want to thank Atlee Simon for popping by here on this podcast, episode 66, as he's now a member of the Calgary Stampeders. Always good to see one of our own here from Regina move on to the professional ranks, and good luck to him continuing his career in Cowtown. And also want to thank, of course, David Dubé, one of the sponsors of this podcast, for his continued support of amateur athletics and in particular, football in this province, trying to grow the game, grow the sport that we love here in Saskatchewan. And he has some big thoughts. I just wish people would listen to him for a change so we could grow this game nationally and get some more interest, because if you don't care about your product, nobody else will. And that's why I started this podcast, to highlight our own kids. If you have a story idea you want me to pursue, please email me, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. If you want to sponsor this podcast, hit me up at the same email address, mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. You can catch me every weekday morning on the Wolf, or on your Wolf app here in Regina, 6 to 10 a.m. And I'm also on the Rough Rider broadcast when the season fires up, the pre- and post-game host, and also on the sidelines for home games. Until next time, talk to you soon.